Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Richard Hoagland about the Comet Ison, and Richard is taking us through the story of course, how we began to looking at the math and the numbers of Elenin, and then, of course, the connection with the larger esoteric occult signaling going on of the sacred religion. But Comet Ison, what is
that was an interesting Freudian slip.
Oh, I know. I think that one comes from a very conscious place, and we'll see if we can tie that in later. But tell us about the numbers, Richard.
One little footnote. Yeah. It's Richard C. Hoagland.
Richard C. Hoagland, okay. Is that what does the C stand for again?
I'll never tell.
Never? Why not?
Is
it your Norwegian roots?
Well, did Arthur ever tell you what Arthur C. Clarke stood for?
I don't know. I haven't looked at enough of his interviews.
Everybody's got to frantically Google now. Okay. Anyway, yeah, it's Richard C.
Richard C. I'm going to say my middle name, Klaus, maybe. C. I don't know.
Nope.
All right. So what about the numbers, Richard?
Well, all right. So this is how you do this stuff. If you're trying to break the code of a secret religion, you either do it through metaphor and parable, which are sometimes very, very dense. But the way you do it is by looking for the numbers in the parables or stories. For instance, I'll give you one example. The story of the death of Osiris in the ancient Egyptian tradition is replete with certain numbers. Do you remember the story? How Osiris's brother Set lures him into a big party, a big festival, with 72 princes of Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the number there, 72, is a key significator, telling us that the actual story of the death of Osiris and his being buried in a box, a sarcophagus, that floats out down the Nile to the Mediterranean Sea and winds up washing up on the shores of Lebanon, and involves itself, entwines itself in a growing tree. These are all metaphors for fundamental physics of the Earth, the precessional cycle, how long it takes for the Earth to wobble on its axis in the precessional cycle, 72 degrees per century, that kind of thing. So you can decode these myths by looking at the numbers. And then later, when Isis finds, you know, the dead Osiris, her husband, buried in this sarcophagus, entwined in a tree in Lebanon, what does the tree stand for? Well, because of the parallel mythology of world trees standing in for the axis of the Earth, we know that the tree represents the rotational orientation of the Earth itself to go along with the 72 years in the precessional cycle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then when she finds him and revives him, and Set obviously is upset because he thought that he'd killed his brother and had taken the throne of Egypt, he not only kills him again, but he tears him into 14 different pieces. The 14 refers to 2 times 7, which is a double tetrahedron, which is the physics basis of the precessional cycle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you see how this is done?
Yep.
You use the numbers to decode the narrative, and the numbers will survive, even if the stories change, and we find zillions of stories of the cosmic flood and the last cycle and all that, but the numbers from culture to culture are the same.
72 virgins, you know, you have...
Exactly, 72 virgins, very, very good, yes, in the contemporary, you know, terror nonsense mythology. The point is, the numbers stay the same even if the stories change. So you look for the numbers, the physics, the reality of how the universe works is based on the numbers, not on the mythologies. So the numbers stay the same. So when I'm looking at Ison, I'm saying, oh my gosh, here we go again. So you have to look for the numbers attached with Ison. Well, the first set of numbers that came out of it, because you know the old song or the old story, you know, once burned, twice shy. After the whole Elenin thing, I was not very eager to jump in on the ISON bandwagon. And I looked cursorily at some of the numbers, and they didn't appear to be anything significant, certainly not like alanine. And I found out later it's because after alanine, after we had blatantly decoded them all over in public, whoever's doing this got a little smarter. They wanted to make it harder to figure out. So what they did was something really, really cool and elegant that nobody not associated with astronomy would have figured out. Back in April, remember, the ISON is discovered last December, I guess, by the Russians. And immediately I thought to myself, Russians? Two comets of the century, 2 years apart, Russians? Interesting. What's Putin up to? Because, of course, Putin is always up to something. I mean, he's got an IQ, 240, something like that. He plays four-dimensional chess. He and Obama have had a thing going for years, which is not well known in terms of what they're really doing. Like, do you really think this whole Syrian chemical weapons thing just came out by accident? Duh. If you believe that, I got a bridge, you know, outside of Lake Havasupai in Arizona to sell you. Anyway, so I'm looking at the numbers attached to ISON, and I don't really see anything that jumps out. And then in July of this year, Hubble, on their website, published images taken through the Hubble Space Telescope of ISON back in April. And you might say to yourself, well, why would they take pictures of the comet in April and not publish them until July? Good question.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real answer to that. Like, why would you wait? Oh, they only put the pictures out around the anniversary of the Apollo moon landing, which had incredible symbolic ritual numbers attached to it going all the way back to 1969, which we document at great length and detail in Dark Mission. So that got me really, okay, so Hubble's paying attention publicly to ISON in July, around the anniversary of Apollo. Well, that's kind of intriguing. I mean, look, when you go to the store, and we don't do this anymore because we all have digital cameras, but when you were on vacation or when you had a birthday party, whatever, and you took your little, you know, brownie or your little, you know, throwaway camera or your Nikon and you took pictures and you went to the drugstore and had them developed, did you ever wait like 5 months to see them?
No.
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 The impulse, the human impulse, again, we're back to what human beings do, is to look at them right away.
Right.
Why would you wait from April to July to publish pictures of an object which all the mainstream press is saying are going to be the comet of the century? Why would you wait? Obviously, you only wait if there's a ritual, secret, religious reason to wait, a la your obeisance to the gods, whatever you really, really believe that making those pictures public at a certain time will do in terms of enhancing your belief system. That's the only thing that makes sense. Otherwise, why wouldn't you post them immediately? Everybody's waiting. Everybody wants to see them. It's a public agency. They take pictures with taxpayer money. Why don't they put them out there right away with taxpayer money?
Mm, yeah.
They waited. So I'm looking at this official website, and we'll put the link up on Red Ice, and I noticed they published a black and white picture where you can actually, it's an interactive image. It's not just one static image. It's a website where you can play with it. You can change the parameters. So what I did, based on a friend of mine in England named Bob Wonderland, who has a really exquisite Sidonia Quest website, he said, you got to go and play with this picture. There's something really, really, really weird going on here. So I did. And I dimmed it, and I dimmed it, and I zoomed in. And in the Hubble picture, and as you know, Hubble is a, you know, exquisite telescope in the vacuum of space orbiting the Earth every 90 minutes. So it's basically, there's nothing between it and anything in space, be it light years away or, you know, a few hundred million miles, like with Hubble taking pictures of ISON back in April. So I zoom in, and in what should be a tiny glowing nucleus surrounded by a fuzzy ball, the comet gases streaming off into space because it's in a vacuum and it basically has no gravity. Instead, there are three stunningly geometric objects in the nucleus. A centerpiece bar, and then two long arms extending out of the bar at what looked to me, just eyeballing it, like a very amazingly important angle, which I immediately used a protractor and measured, and lo and behold, the geometry of the bar and the center point made a beautiful 120 tetrahedral hyperdimensional physics angle. And my first thought was, oh my God, Hubble, the reason they waited is because they took this picture of an obvious spacecraft composed of three divisions at a key angle, and it's sitting out there by the orbit of Jupiter coming in, and they don't know how to tell anybody, and they waited months and months and months after they talked about all this and finally decided to put it out there without comment, but they want to go on the record by having basically put the picture out. That was my first thinking process as to why they took such an amazing image and then waited April, May, June, July to make it public.
Right.
And then I look a little closer and I realize, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. Why would you, because I started reading the description on the site of what the picture represented, and they claimed it was a synthesis of three images. You know, the way you make color in NASA with all these cameras on all these unmanned missions is you basically take three pictures, red, green, and blue, the old Technicolor process, and then you put them together in the computer. And in fact, there have been umpteen stories on the web, which you can Google, of how Hubble makes gorgeous color pictures out of its black and white imagery using this filtered process, and how they use Photoshop to actually composite the final picture. And there's been major magazine articles, and just Google Hubble Photoshop images, and you'll come up with those stories of technically how they put these together.
Right.
But why would you put a color picture where you need three separate images, red, green, and blue, why would you put them out there as a black and white image? There's nothing to be gained by putting them together as a black and white image. The whole reason would be to make color. So the more I read, the more I realized, because they had a description in there of when they had taken the images and how long each exposure was. This is going to be our first Obama hit. Remember, it's Obama's NASA?
Right.
Each image was taken for precisely 440 seconds. Not 441, 439. The president is the 44th president of the United States. In the rituals, the zeros go away. You don't count the same way you do in ordinary math. It's the ultimate impression as opposed to the actual decimal equivalent. So they took three images of ISON with the president's signature attached to it. And they claimed on the website that the reason the geometry looked so weird is because that was not the geometry of ISON's nucleus half a billion miles away above the orbit of Jupiter when they took the picture in April. That was the geometry that came out because they took the picture when Hubble was on the left-hand side of its orbit of the Earth, if you look at Jupiter, in the middle of its orbit of the Earth, if you look at Jupiter, and on the right-hand side of the orbit, 45 minutes apart. And if you took images with a moving spacecraft, which Hubble is orbiting the Earth, right? And the Earth is orbiting the Sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the comet is orbiting the Sun, although it's coming in almost in a straight line, geometrically, you know, when this was done. The resulting motions during that 440 seconds, which is, I mean, 440 seconds, let me get my calculator out here, 440 divided by 60 equals 7.333333 minutes. So
that's
each image was
long time,
7 minutes long.
Yeah.
in that long time, this is a time exposure. Now, we know, because we've all done this, you know, we've taken lights of cars on freeways and whatever, that if you open the shutter and leave it open, if you got moving lights in the picture, the lights are going to cause a streak, right?
Yep.
So during the 7-minute exposure of each of these three images, based on the three points where they took the picture when Hubble was orbiting the Earth, that ultimate geometry was inevitable. And what was really striking to me, because I know this stuff geometrically, I know space, I know orbits, they could have decided to take the pictures at any other time, and they would have completely gotten a totally different geometry, or almost no geometry at all. They could have, for instance, taken the picture where Hubble is right in the middle, lined up with ISON, and taken a picture and then waited 90 minutes later when it was back on the same side of the Earth in the same place and taken the next picture and then waited another 90 minutes and taken the third picture. They could have supered all those pictures. They would have had crisp, clear stars and galaxies in the background. And ISON would have appeared with a little dot as a nucleus and a fuzzy comet, you know, coma and tail, and there would have been no geometry at all. In other words, the Hubble people at the Space Science Telescope Institute outside Baltimore had commanded the spacecraft to take the picture, which would have created on the ground in the computer exactly the hyperdimensional tetrahedral geometry that we saw in the numbers attached to Alanine, except this time they were done on Earth by NASA attached to ISON.
Mm.
And this made me go ding, 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 ding. Like, okay, for some reason NASA is attaching this symbology to ISON. What the hell could it mean?
So there's no... As far as you, well, we might get to this, though, but there might not be a inherent geometry to the comet itself that's particularly interesting.
That's exactly what I was wondering, because when I looked at the orbit parameters, unlike Alanine, where all these connections leaped out of the numbers of the data, nothing like that leaped out of ISON. So I continue to look, and I continue to kind of gather information. And it literally was only a few nights ago, just kind of around the time that Lana sent me the email saying, would you like to do a story? That's why I haven't been doing stories on Coast, on ISON, because there was nothing to talk about.
Right, yep.
I had one data point, which to me was significant, but, you know, it ain't going to convince most everybody else. What you need is more data points.
Indeed.
The next major event which happened, which is connected to that link I sent you before we did the show,
mm-hmm.
had to do with a special ceremony that was conducted over the last couple weeks, or in the last couple weeks, on November 9th, where the Russians, on a Soyuz mission to the ISS space station, the International Space Station, set up, you know, its cosmonauts, carrying the torch, the mechanical, streamlined, avant-garde, kind of deco art-looking torch that they've been running all over the world from runner to runner to runner. Because as you know, before every Olympics, leading up to the February 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi in Russia, the tradition has been to basically run a torch around the world with all kinds of various people, both professional runners and amateur runners and just people, and then to take that torch and light the fire at the Olympic Games as a symbolic, mythological connection to ancient Greece and the lighting of the Greek torch. And basically it came from the mythology of the torch of Prometheus, where the god Prometheus, one of the Titans, stole fire for mankind and gave us civilization by stealing fire from the gods.
Yep.
That's the mythology attached to the lighting of the ceremonial torch of both the Summer and the Winter Olympics. So this time, which was only the third time they'd done this in terms of Olympic Games, but the first time they were going to actually take the torch outside the space station or the spaceship on a space walk, they took the torch that's been run around the world and is going to be used to light the ceremonial game fire on the morning of the February 7th of next year, 2014. They took it into space and they took it outside, and the astronauts or the cosmonauts actually did little ceremonies with it, handing it off to each other, holding it in their left hands and their right hands, posing for pictures and all this. All the while, I discovered, they were wearing patches on their spacesuits, which basically married the concept of the Olympic torch and the comet in the sky as seen from orbit, Comet Ison, as admitted by the artist on the website I sent you from collectspace.com. The whole story is there. So I had my colleague, Greg Ahrens, who is a brilliant guy, lives quietly with his wife in Missouri, and has worked with me on some of these other elaborate research papers, particularly all the ceremonial secret stuff that went on around the appearance of the so-called Norway Spiral before President Obama was going to accept his Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
2009?
Sure, of course.
Suddenly this incredible celestial thing appears over the old Soviet Union as seen from northern Norway and Finland and Sweden and dumbfounds everybody. Well, there's a four-part article, paper, on Enterprise, which details exactly all the numbers that went into that and why our conclusion is that was a special hyperdimensionally created signal, kind of like the bat signal, issuing a warning that a coming paradigm shift during Obama's administration would be imminent. And we've been waiting for the culmination of that message for years and years. Well, it looks like we might not have much longer to wait. Because when I had Greg do the numbers, and I did them separately so we could compare notes, because science has to be independent replication. And let me call up his email now, because I had him actually put all this in one email for me so I could easily talk to the audience about it. The Sochi Olympic torch spacewalk occurred from 1912 to 1917 Moscow time, which is 1512 to 1517 UTC, Universal Time, or Greenwich Time, on Saturday, November 2013, November 9th. Ending with the torch passing and the posing between the two cosmonauts. So what I had Greg do was to run the numbers for that little time window as to if you had been standing at various sites around the planet, where would Ison be appearing? If you could either look in the daytime sky or look through the Earth and look at the celestial alignment above and below the horizon, which is what we do with these numbers and these alignments going back all the way to the beginning of NASA. Going back decades, we found all these critical alignments for key objects that are mythologically connected and related to the larger cosmic theme. So let me just read out some here. From Sochi, during that little time window, Mars was at 33 degrees below the horizon. 33 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Does that number ring a bell?
Sure does, yeah.
What is 33 degrees?
Well, it's the very important Freemasonic number, of course,
yep.
For one, but there's, oh my God, there's thousands of...
It's intimately related in the hyperdimensional equation.
Right.
It's a key number of the hyperdimensional physics, which, of course, is where the Masons got it. That's really what it is. It's a code for their secret understanding of this sacred ancient physics. Now, Mars is at minus 33. Regulus, which is the key lion star in the constellation of Leo, was at minus 33 simultaneously. Mercury, which is communications, right? 19.5 degrees below the horizon. The moon, plus 33 degrees above the horizon. From Moscow. Now, this is where things get a little more arcane, because in addition to the physics numbers, there are critical symbolic numbers associated with the mythology of the death and resurrection of Osiris and his son Horus in the Egyptian tradition. And remember, we're dealing now with an ancient Egyptian religion, so we have to know the numbers attached to the religion. And without making a long story much too long, all I'll say is another number we need to add to our lexicon is 17. Wherever you see 17, you know you're associating Isis, Osiris, and Horus, the sacred triumvirate, which in the Christian religion is Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. Right. You know what it works?
Yeah.
So at that moment during the ceremony, Mercury, remember the god in Egypt, the god Mercury was Thoth, who supposedly built the Great Pyramid. He was the god of wisdom and writing and sacred teachings and all that. He basically taught mankind the sciences.
Yeah.
It was 17 degrees below the horizon.
Hmm.
17. So then we go to Giza, and Orion's belt was at minus 39 degrees. Why is 39 important? It's twice 19.5. And Anka, which is the brightest star in the constellation of the Phoenix, was right on the horizon, rising, right on the horizon. And Phoenix represents reincarnation, rebirth, the rising of things, the reemergence of things. So you have to look at this not only numerically, but also what the mythology is trying to tell you the numbers are trying to communicate. From Washington, D.C., Saturn, 33 degrees. Why is Saturn important? Because Saturn is where we have found a huge amount of stuff referring to the ancient solar system-wide civilization that used to live here before the catastrophe, and that's a long, long other show. I did a preview in London some years ago, and people keep pestering me, where can we get real good visuals from what's on the web about Saturn? You showed such amazing stuff about Saturn. In astrology, Saturn is supposed to represent reality, the concretation of frames, the three-dimensional solidity of reality in which we are immersed. So when you see Saturn in a key position in this mythology, rising on the eastern horizon, on the south-southeast, 33 degrees, you're marrying reality with the Masonic rituals, with the physics. So the meta message is, the reality in which we all experience is about to change because of the introduction of this ancient reality now manifest in the 3D. Regulus from Washington, 33 degrees above the west-southwest. I'm sorry, 39, twice 19.5. Mercury, 39 degrees above the south-southeast. Sirius, which is Isis, minus 17 degrees. You can't make this stuff up. Those number of hits for that ceremony in that little window. Oh, and the final thing, if you were standing in the window of the Isis space station, you didn't have a spacesuit, and you were looking out the window as this ceremony was going outside being broadcast on television, Ison itself would have been just on the horizon because the spacecraft was over the Sahara Desert. So if you looked at Ison, it would have been on the horizon. And they did the final ceremony with the handing the torch back and forth between the astronauts or the cosmonauts?
Mm-hmm.
33 minutes before sunset at Isis.
Huh.
As it's moving in orbit. So to me, this cinched it. ISON is somehow going to become a pivotal part of the 2014 Olympics on February 7th. Okay. So we set up the sky and looked at our redshift simulations, and at the moment when the opening ceremony is supposed to kick off, and I don't have the time in front of me right here, but that's part of another document that we'll put on the website. The belt stars of Orion, remember Orion is OSIRIS, will stand, particularly the key star, at 44 degrees above the horizon. 44 representing Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And ISON will be 33 degrees above it in the overhead nighttime sky. Which brings us to, will anybody see it? Because if ISON followed the path and the pattern of visibility of Elenine, then all of this could still be an inside baseball ritual known only to the worshippers, shall we say, and never be seen other than on the patches. Oh, did I tell you there was a second patch?
Yeah, there was. I wanted to ask you about that. It was called a 37.5 insignia.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, what does that mean? Any
isn't
decoding there?
Well, yeah, 37. Remember, in the physics, in mainstream physics, there is a major mystery which Richard Feynman, the Nobel laureate, actually had on his license plate. And it's 1 divided by 37. It's called the fine structure constant, and it represents the biggest mystery in physics. What does it mean? Nobody in contemporary physics knows what 1 divided by 37 means, the so-called fine structure constant. It shows up in the orbits of electrons orbiting atoms. It shows up in the astrophysics of objects circling black holes in galaxies billions of light years away. It shows up all over physics, and nobody knows what it means. Well, I'm interpreting the 37.5. You know how you put out various computer programs like Windows?
Versions, and yeah.
You know, sure. 2.0, yeah. 2.1. I think 37.5 means that this ceremony is indicating we're moving from the physics we know into the next iteration of the physics. It's 37.5.
Yeah, because it was, you know, expedition 37 crew members, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was,
yep.
You had 9 stars on the patch, the Ennead,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
Interesting. What do you make of the...
Well, you had some questions. So why don't we pause here, because I've kind of given you the background, which is, yes, ISON is incredibly significant to the, you know, 0.01%. It shows up ostentatiously in the preparation for the Sochi Games, which, by the way, is why Obama is not changing the games from Russia, even though they're incredibly negative on anything having to do with gays and lesbians and LGBT people and all that. They cannot be moved because the games have to occur where they are to fulfill the bigger ritual. That tells me now absolutely why the games have not been moved, even though an extraordinary amount of political pressure has been brought to bear on the West to move them out of this incredible retro homophobic society which Russia has turned into. They have to occur when they have to occur and where they have to occur.
How do you think they calculate some of this? Do they look at as many spots as possible, sites, I guess, and start to do the math themselves and see where they get a big hit in terms of the time stamp, if you will, on this, or how do you think they go about this?
Well, if I was doing it, you'd have to do it from both ends. You'd have to pick sacred sites on the planet that have something important attached, going back to ancient history. And obviously everybody now is going to run, as they're listening to me, to their Google and Googling all history on Sochi, Russia, as they can, right?
That's what I did.
What happened at Russia, Sochi, a long, 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 long time ago?
Yeah.
Is it, in fact, an ancient sacred site? Because we know there's all kinds of very bizarre things in Europe now that we didn't know about even just a few years ago. For instance, in Yugoslavia, there's these amazing real pyramids that are of the same scale as some of the Martian pyramids, except the mainstream is poo-pooing the people doing the work and claiming they're just mountains. No, they're not. They're ancient, ancient artificial pyramids. And how do we know this? Because they're giving off signals just like the real pyramids have given off that I've been able to measure with our Accutron torsion field measuring system. So if you start with the ancient sacred sites, which are on the planet because of the ancient physics and how those sites impacted the Earth's geological and climatological and consciousness evolution, which is why they did all this stuff, and then you move the film forward to why you would want to put a ceremony at that site, then you would have to figure out and calculate when a celestial harbinger of a paradigm shift needs to appear at a certain time of day and the time of year. And then you would have to actually adjust the orbit of that object so it basically made its marks. So it hit all the marks. Like when you have actors in a studio, what you don't see on camera or on film is there's usually an X marked on the floor where the actor or the actress is supposed to stand and give their lines. It's called hitting your marks. Well, you can do this with a celestial object if you have a space program run not on rockets, on burning stuff up and throwing it out the back end, but on anti-gravity. And yes, we can document till the cows come home, there have been secret efforts by the secret space program on both sides of the so-called Iron Curtain for decades to harness anti-gravity propulsion and torsion field physics to enable real spacecraft to exist and to run around the solar system at will at thousands upon thousands of miles per second, if necessary. And using this secret space program, you can nudge any Burgee bit into any orbit you want, signifying with the numbers any ritual you want so that it shows up at the right place at the right time for the, you know, worshipers or the, there's another technical term for worshipers. It's a priesthood. It's a secret society. It's a secret cult. It's whatever term you want to apply to it, so that those people understand the cosmic significance of what they're experiencing in service to a larger reality that, in fact, is operating according to these specific hyperdimensional physics terms.
So, Shi, let me ask you a little bit more here about what do you think is the deeper, I guess, metaphysical significance. If this influence something unseen, does it influence the mass psyche when they do this in some way? I mean, because it's all, not always, but very often, it's hinged very much on the immense ritualism that occurs in and surround the Olympics, usually the opening
Absolutely.
Ceremonies and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. So you pick a site, you know, why didn't they pick Moscow? They picked Sochi. Why Sochi? You obviously have to have snow and ice and all that. But it's kind of chilly and cold in Moscow this time of year, right, in November. So why would you pick Sochi? I don't know enough about Sochi yet because I haven't really had time to do the digging.
Well, that's down there, too. I mean, that's almost one of the most southern points in Russia you can
get,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's something unusual about Sochi, I would say, which goes back to our ancient hidden history that is going to be symbolically important for the globally televised games, which are going to be conducted according to this ritual that will not be publicly proclaimed. They won't be saying that they're doing this according to this ritual. They'll just do it, and then everybody's consciousness watching television is entrained because it's at the right time, at the right place, with the right celestial significators. So it's like an invisible consciousness vibration in the force, a tremor in the force, that is being modulated by the puppet masters behind the scenes to an unsuspecting audience who are supposed to be entrained in terms of consciousness in a larger plan. And we know this because they have to use the numbers. And since we've cracked the code on the numbers, the plan falls out on the floor. You can't hide the plan because you can't hide the numbers.
Do you think, Richard, that any of this, because some of the numbers you mentioned, specifically when it came to the clock, anyway, 1912 to 1917, it was on the November 9th, was it, that this occurred, the Russian Revolution, the 8th of November 1917, is there any connection there?
I'm sure it's all connected. Remember, the World War One ended on November 11th at 11:11 a.m.
I did
not
know that.
And all those 11s are hyperdimensional. The 11s is basically, people ask me over and over again, why when I see 11:11 on my clock do I keep seeing it throughout my whole life? George has asked this on the air. Noria said again and again, why do I keep seeing 11:11? Because mathematically, 11:11 is a stand-in for 19.5 in the physics of hyperdimensional geometry and tetrahedral mathematics. And I could go through how, and it would bore everybody because they don't have the visuals in front of them.
But the 11s is there. It's gateways.
Yeah, 11, yeah. Mm-hmm. 11 or any permutation of 11, 11, 11, 11, 11. So when you see that, you know you're dealing with the physics. When you see 17 now, you know you're dealing with death and resurrection. Let me just lay out one really weirdness, which to me is very significant.
Sure.
And which I don't think anybody else picked up on, but now when I lay this out there, some people will.
Yep.
Didn't you find it kind of odd that Edward Snowden wound up in Russia?
Is he there now?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
Still there.
Yep.
Of all the places he could have gone, he went to Russia.
Yeah,
and he'll be there during this Winter Olympics.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's very indicative of the Cold War. Yeah,
there is more.
Mm.
When he just arrived, remember he was only supposed to spend time at the airport while the flight to get him some other place was being arranged, and all the press and all the governments of the world were looking at all the Aeroflot flights. You know, to places like Bolivia, they actually stopped and made the Bolivian president's plane land in France. It was Austria, because they suspected he'd stowed away on board. And how they got the president of a sovereign nation to literally land, and this isn't the Russians, it was the United States that basically called up and said, for God's sake, stop that airplane, so they wouldn't let him pass, you know, the Bolivian president through airspace, so he had to land. And needless to say, Snowden had not stowed on board that airplane. And then a few days later, he was supposed to be booked on an Aeroflot flight to Cuba. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole bunch of newsmen that wound up on that flight looking to see if Edward Snowden showed up.
Yeah.
Did you know that night on the evening news and on the 24-hour cable networks, there were umpteen photographs, videos of two seats, a window seat and the seat next to it, that had been booked apparently for Snowden and an unknown companion? Do you happen to remember the numbers of those seats?
No.
17 A and B.
Hmm.
That's when I knew Snowden was entirely a setup, part of this ritual, part of a paradigm change, part of a return to the first time being orchestrated, both celestially and in terms of terrestrial events, to change the absolutely deadly course we are currently on to something different, something necessary to evoke all the fear porn and all the fear porn mongers to try to surround it with as much negative public appreciation as possible to negate the positive enlightenment and return to real consciousness that is somehow trying in these symbols to be born. Because remember,
Yep. This
physics is real. You've heard the concept, Henrik, of sympathetic magic, right?
Sure, yep.
Which basically is nothing more than a resonance. You know, we say constantly, well, I'm, you know, I really click with this person, or we're really connected, or, you know, that all means we're in resonance, right?
Right.
The universe, in terms of the physics I've been able to measure, I've had the privilege of taking my Accutron system now around all these sacred sites and measure energies on pyramids after pyramids and at Stonehenge and Avebury. And I was invited, you know, this fall to go to measure the Bosnian pyramids, but unfortunately, because of certain things that happened, I couldn't make it this year. I was able to measure the physics of the Kukulcan pyramid at Chichen Itza just before the winter solstice of 2012, the famed end of the Mayan calendar, and I have incontrovertible proof from those measurements that consciousness can change the physics. I've got the readings. I've got the data. I've got individuals changing the physics. If they're in the vicinity of a pyramid or an ancient sacred site where the amplification of the background field rises above a certain point, and I've got mass consciousness recorded when a mass of 100 people were doing combined meditation and the readings went boing, 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 right in synchronization to their meditation. So I can prove that if you entrain the consciousness of enough people watching on television, you will change the physics of the world. You will change history. You can change the future either for good or for ill. That's what 9/11 was all about. It was done to change the consciousness negatively. And what I see as being planned is designed to be the antidote to that negativity which we've now lived with for over 10 years and is supposed to be something extraordinary and positive and wonderful. And what I said when Elohim made its appearance but didn't do anything spectacular, I said, stay tuned because the next shoe will drop, and Elohim was the harbinger in terms of those numbers of something wonderful about to happen, and I think now Ison is about to make that true.
So what is the opportunity, do you think, for the, well, I guess we could talk about this from point of view of different factions as well, if there indeed is a balancing force to this, but the secret societies that at this time then is using the combined efforts of the rituals surrounding the Olympics and to the incoming, you know, comet and everything else to influence events. What do they hope to gain from this, do you think?
To change the world.
And in what way?
Again, the trajectory we're on is catastrophe. Unless something intervenes in a major game-changing way, life on this planet, for most people, is going to get worse and worse and worse, both in terms of simple climate, in terms of their day-to-day. Look at what just happened in the Philippines. And that's a direct result of the climate problems precipitated by mass burning of fossil fuels to the total abrogation of any rational science having to do with what the climate does when you dump a lot of you know, absorbing CO2 in the atmosphere and you heat up the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this cannot go on. Oceans will rise, cities will drown, hurricanes and typhoons will become stronger and stronger and stronger, and this is not even counting the wars going on behind the scenes between the various factions that have the capability technologically to actually control the weather. I'm not all unsure that the typhoon, which devastated the Philippines, was not man-made, was not, shall we say, amplified by the secret technology as part of the war, as part of the dark negative side trying to prevent the paradigm shift which the other side is trying to inculcate and to make manifest and to make real over the next few years. In other words, you have a secret war going on. And the secret war, you know, is being waged by tools and weapons to which the mainstream hasn't a clue. So I would not put it past the bad guys for having deliberately done the Philippines. I can't prove it. I don't have the signatures like I have for some other weather events where it's crystal clear that this kind of technology was used. And I'm able to sit here in Albuquerque and actually record the torsion field changes, the tremors and the force occurring with the tinkering with the ionosphere. No matter where on Earth those changes are being made to occur, you can see the ripple effects if you're anywhere on the Earth. And we're able to actually record and time them using satellite imagery to where events on the other side of the world can be correlated with the physics we're recording here. With this typhoon, I think it's Hainan, is that it?
I'm actually not sure about that, yeah.
Okay, well, you can Google before the end of the show. We can give people the right name. I have been unable to find any specific connections to a physics that was amplifying it. But the very fact that on the eve of all this stunning stuff about to happen that could change the world for the positive, you have such a terrible negative, event which kills thousands of people and which is on nightly news on every network, which is a real downer in terms of consciousness. If you're trying to influence people's consciousness, how are you going to do it? You have to scare the bejesus out of them and fill them with sorrow and sadness, and you have to fill the ether with terrible, wailing and gnashing of teeth and sorrow and loss and all those horrible emotions that are engendered around any major disaster or catastrophe when it's broadcast to all those other minds by way of this global news sphere, the internet and global television. So, yeah, I'm very suspicious of what just happened in the Philippines as part of the negative effort to counteract the positive stuff which appears to be building around the symbology of ISON. So the model is that ISON is going to do something really interesting, and if it's going to change consciousness of a lot of people, meaning the planet, it can't do it in secret, right? It has to be doing it in public. So all the things that people said at me about LNE, and it never did anything. Well, at one level, that's a very legitimate criticism. If it's going to do something visible to change consciousness, it's got to kind of be visible. So I'm looking at ISON, how it's underperforming, and I'm saying, well, it may be that the bad guys found a way to squelch this, or at the very least, it's only designed as a prelude of a prelude for a sacred few, and the rest of the world will never notice anything. Until a few nights ago, when, as I told you, in a matter of a couple of days, 48 hours, ISON brightened by a factor of 16. It's now visible. And on Monday, when this airs, on the 18th, it will be in conjunction with two other very significant celestial objects. And if it continues to do what it's doing, it should be easily visible with the naked eye in a dark sky in the country, outside of a city, or in a city with binoculars, in the pre-dawn skies, about an hour before dawn, glimmering with its tail and its peculiar colors, because ISON has very peculiar colors compared to a lot of other comets I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's glowing a brilliant green and red. I mean, almost, you can think it symbolically as stop and go, simultaneously, like there's a choice, like we're looking at go or stop, depending upon the consciousness of those viewing it. We have a choice to make. We can either go forward or we can stop. It's almost like the colors, which of course are determined by the gases, spectroscopically resonating with sunlight, are being determined in terms of a larger symbolic message. I've never seen a comet with these colors so brilliant. I mean, red in comets is absolutely unbelievable, and I'm going to send to you, so you can post on Red Ice, a picture taken last night of this comet glowing green and red. Almost like stoplights.
I want to see that. So,
on the pre-dawn darkness of Monday, the 18th, you've got ISON, the comet Encke, which is even brighter, which has a tremendously interesting historical symbolic message attached to it, and then the planet Mercury. Well, what is Mercury in the old ancient Greek tradition, which is most of the Western, tradition? What does it symbolize, other than the more ancient god Thoth? It symbolizes communication, right?
Yeah.
And it's just turned positive. It's been in retrograde for weeks. On Monday, Mercury's orbit turns prograde or positive, meaning it goes around the sun in the same direction optically as seen from Earth as we are going around the sun. Why is that important in the physics? Because when you stir the physics backwards, bad things happen. When you stir the physics forwards, good things happen. Again, this is where the mythology attached to Mercury retrograde in astrology and all kinds of negative things hitting the fan has come from. It's grounded in a real torsion field measurable physics, which we have been measuring. And on the 18th, just as Ison appears right next to it with Encke, these three celestial objects, each of individual and unique celestial symbolic significance, all appearing together that morning. Well, guess what happens that morning? I just got an email from the Obama White House. They are having a nationwide global internet call-in to Obama, where he is going to participate in people asking him questions about the coming agenda for his administration on Monday the 18th, when Mercury goes posigrade and Ison stands right next to it.
He'll be channeling the gods.
Yep. Isn't that special? So, moving forward, I got to thinking with my friend Greg a couple nights ago, why don't we look at other key dates and see if Ison is going to hit the marks and reinforce the cultural attachment to these dates. Now, you know that its closest approach to the Earth is on the 26th of December, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you know its closest approach to the Sun is on Thanksgiving Day,
28th,
where we're all supposed to gather and give thanks for what we've got and be mindful of people who don't have what we've got and kind of take stock of our lives in terms of historical American tradition on the 28th. Well, the 28th just happens to be, again, thinking in terms of mass consciousness for the United States, when Ison rounds the turn and comes closest to the Sun and will, because of sunlight and energy and radiation and all that, in the conventional model, become really, really bright. And then it will carry that brightness, whatever the heating does to the ices in the, you know, Fred Whipple, you know, dirty iceberg model. It will sail around the Sun in orbit and sail up into the morning skies over the next several weeks. And so by December 26th, it should be visible as a really bright object with a long streaming tail like a searchlight extending up above the horizon, very bright to anybody looking. Unless someone in the secret space program, which has set it on its trajectory so it hits all these alignment marks like Elenine, does something different to it. Now, what could they do that would be different that would make it really spectacular? Well, they could blow it up. Back in 2007, the night, and this was just by coincidence because I had timed this to a shuttle launch. There was a space shuttle launch on October 21st, maybe, of 2007, where they launched in the shuttle a Hollywood prop from the Star Wars movies, a plastic lightsaber. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at this, and I decided it would make a good news peg to do our National Press Club press conference on the issuance of Dark Mission. So I called a press conference to coincide with the launch date of this Shuttle Discovery mission carrying the lightsaber, the fake lightsaber, you know, just a plastic prop from Hollywood, into orbit, because the plan was they were going to take it to the space station and then bring it back to Earth and put it in a museum in Houston at the Johnson Space Center. And I'm thinking to myself, why in the world would NASA do all this around a fake prop and a movie?
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
Later that night. Remember, what's the key scene in the first Star Wars film that really boggled everybody's mind? When the Death Star is assembled and the princess is taken to view Alderaan, where the Rebel Alliance is supposed to be headquartered, what did George Lucas do in Star Wars that blew everybody's mind?
You're talking about the two moons scene there.
No. Before that. He blew up Alderaan.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Empire used the Death Star to blow up the whole planet.
Right, right. Okay.
A la Tom Van Flandern's model of how we get comets and asteroids, right?
Right.
That night, the same night of the launch of the Discovery Shuttle mission carrying the lightsaber from Star Wars, written by George Lucas, the same night that I, because of the Star Wars homage from NASA, I picked to hold my press conference on Dark Mission at the National Press Club, a comet at Jupiter called Comet Holmes blows up exactly like Alderaan and becomes over the next few nights a million times brighter than it had been just hours before.
Right.
And I took Robin outside, and we, you know, would lay on the chaise lounges with the binoculars and look up over the Sandias. This was in Perseus, in the constellation of Perseus. I have always felt that coincidence was not a coincidence, given what I know about George Lucas and what Star Wars really is, which is basically our real history. And that's why NASA was doing an homage to George Lucas, because they knew that night the secret space program was going to blow up a comet in homage during the same shuttle mission carrying the fake lightsaber. You can't make this stuff up. This is real. You can go and Google and document all of these events coinciding.
Mm-hmm.
So now we flash forward the film again, and in the morning sky, along with Ison, there are three other comets. Did you know that?
No.
And all of them are visible to the naked eye.
Right, okay.
There's Comet Ison, which just became visible late to the party. There's Comet Encke, which is a long-standing member of the solar system. It goes back a couple hundred years that Encke's been orbiting the sun every, I think it's 3.3 years.
And that's Encke, not Encke, but Encke, yeah.
It's not the Sumerian Encke, it's German Encke.
Yeah.
But they're actually the same.
Interesting anyway, yeah.
And how it was named was by a Mason, and that's another long story. The third comet is called Comet Lovejoy. Not named after the reverend in, I think, the movies done by, what's her name? I can't think of the name of the movie series. But it's not named after him. It's named after an amateur astronomer who just happens to have the name Lovejoy, and he's spotted several comets. Well, he's found a new one early this year, and it's now approaching the sun, and so it's also visible.
Huh.
The fourth comet, found by one of the government networks, called the Linear Network, and I don't remember what the acronym Linear stands for. Its number is Linear 11. Remember, 11 is the physics. Well, 2 weeks ago, Linear 11 blew up in the morning sky, just like Holmes in 2007.
Huh.
Except it didn't become a million times brighter. It only became like 5 magnitudes brighter, which is, 100 times. But I'm looking at this and I'm saying, remember the old Emily Dickinson quote, tell all the truth, but tell it slant?
Mm-hmm.
Was someone foreshadowing what they're planning to do with Ison using Linear as a test bed?
Interesting.
So if they blew up Linear, would they blow up Ison? And if they decided to blow up Ison to make it really, 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 really spectacular, because can you imagine what a comet that becomes a million times brighter right next to the sun, and by the way, it physically became larger than the sun eventually.
Right.
But
yeah.
It was in the outer solar system. So, and I'll send you all the images. There's a whole sequence showing its explosion and then its expansion. It's a beautiful set of images showing that this stuff happens. And no one could naturally figure out why a comet at Jupiter, where the ices are as cold as like a few degrees of absolute zero and harder than steel, what would make it blow up?
Right, yep.
There's no energy out there. There's no natural mechanism unless somebody did it. And again, I cannot document in this show, but I can if you read Dark Mission, and a few other references I can give you, that there has been a secret space program using real anti-gravity, building real spaceships for decades that we're not supposed to know about. So the idea that you could have a cadre of priests whose job it was to make celestial portents happen coincidentally with terrestrial politics to make manifest for the worshippers that the gods shine with favor on their predilections and their path and their policies, it's totally... Remember the Wizard of Oz. What did the wizard turn out to be? The guy behind the curtain pulling the levers. All we've done using these numbers is unveil the curtain, pull the curtain back. There's the guy pulling the levers. The guys in the secret space program using the little spaceships to go and nudge things into the right orbits, and if they do that, they can also make them blow up. Did you follow this recent news story on, I forget the name of the asteroid, something, something P5 in the inner asteroid belt, which a few days ago blew up and has six straight tails extending out from it at the most bizarre angles? And mainstream astronomers are saying, Google, let me actually get the number here so that we can have everybody go Google.
Yeah, it is P5, I think.
Yeah, let me go get the right story. Oh, it's so hard to keep track of all this stuff because it's happening at a faster and faster and faster pace.
Yeah.
And I can't easily find it. So
I have the story right here, actually. We can link to that.
Oh, good. You'll link to that and make sure you put the images up, because they are trying all kinds of arm waving to explain this in a natural way, and there is no way to explain it.
It's six tails on this
thing. Yeah. But they're not. If the object was rotating, which is their model, and the dust was coming off like a lawn sprinkler, ever seen the water coming off a lawn sprinkler?
Yeah.
It curved in an arc.
Of course.
Because of something called the conservation of angular momentum, kind of a key part of physics. These dust tails are all sticking straight out like searchlight beams. And I've got my friend Greg measuring the angles even as we speak, because someone asked me the other day, have you looked at the angles? And I said, well, I didn't think, given that it rotated in 13 days and we're looking at a different projection, that, you know, if you measure the angles of a three-dimensional object in 2D, you won't get the right angles. You've got to have a 3D plot, so we need a complete rotation. The Hubble people have not given us a 3D complete rotation of this object for some reason. Gosh, I wonder why. Anyway, there is no natural model to easily explain this. So I'm just saying, okay, is this another warning by whoever's using the secret space program to set up these celestial portents about celestial spectaculars to come? And is there symbolic involvement of P5, whatever its name is, in the bigger picture? So yeah, we need to link that on your site.
Definitely P5. And so... we're potentially up for some cosmic fireworks.
Maybe. So let me get to the next milestone, the next data point. So I'm looking at this accumulating thing about ISON and the fact that it's hitting its marks with Mercury on Monday. It's now suddenly visible, which means you can connect visually communications, Obama, and ISON. I'm looking at the next big data point, which, of course, is Christmas Day. Right?
Yeah.
What if ISON, as it rose, did something really spectacular on Christmas Day and became the Kachina blue, the Hopi blue Kachina, or as we know it in the West, a Christmas star? Wouldn't that kind of ring everybody's bells? Wouldn't that really make symbolic tongues wag?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be a ding, 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 as Art Bell would say?
birth of a new, whatever that would be, Messiah,
it,
whatever.
It's whatever the spin you would put on it in the mainstream. Because people's consciousness would be entrained to all think together, to all resonate together, and then they would, shall we say, be more receptive to whatever the mythology, or what's the mythology surrounding Christmas? It's the Son of God coming back to earth to redeem mankind, right? A Messiah, a Savior.
What do you make about the kind of coinciding Antichrist narrative that runs with some of the Christian mythology here as well?
Well, yeah, you've got yin and yang. You've got plus and minus. You've got the positive and the negative. There can never be a positive without a negative. People have to choose. Remember, the colors of Isan to me are really striking, red and green. Stop and go.
Mm.
All right? That to me is really, if that continues as it gets brighter and brighter, if that color mythology is continuing, that would be really interesting, to say the least. So let me get to the punchline.
Yeah.
So thank God we got computers and we've got downloads and we've got direct links now where I can download the latest trajectory and coordinates for ISON from the computers at Harvard. Remember, you can't lie about the trajectory. Why? Because all the amateur astronomers will hang you an effigy and go and bang down your door and hang you for real if you lie to them about where these things are. That's the one thing coming out of NASA we can trust, where things are in the sky, because you can't hide the sky. Really simple. So using those coordinates in the computer, the other night I projected ahead, and Greg did, and Greg beat me to it. He sent me an email. He said, "You're not going to believe this." I said, "Go ahead." He said, at 4:40 a.m. Hawaii time. Why 4:40? That's 44. President Obama, 44. Who is born in Hawaii?
Kenya? No, yeah.
No. The numbers say Hawaii.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't work unless it's Hawaii. From Honolulu. By the way, it's also 19.5. In the physics on the planet, the Hawaiian Islands, the island just to the south of Honolulu, is at 19.5, where Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea are, where I measured the physics this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
Really amazing physics. Really amazing. But it's not as measured from Mauna Loa, Mauna Kea, which has no meaning to Obama. It's as measured from Honolulu, where he was born. So at 4:40 a.m., ISON is rising over the northeast horizon at, ready?
Yep.
44 degrees azimuth.
Take the last one again.
At 4:40 a.m. from Honolulu, on Christmas morning in Hawaii, ISON is at azimuth 44 degrees as measured from north, from Polaris. Mm-hmm. You know how degrees are measured, in a right-hand, counterclockwise. I'm sorry, clockwise from the north, 10 degrees, 20, 30, 40. It's at 44 degrees. And at 4:40 a.m., it's at 17 degrees elevation. Bingo.
What's the Obama
speak? Oh, Obama's Horus. The President of the United States, whoever the President is in the Founding Fathers Masonic tradition. This is why I've done all this in various presentations. It's on a whole series of videos I put out there called The Hyperdimensional Election of Barack Obama. Just go and find all the pirated copies on YouTube. There are zillions of them. And I laid all this out again when Ellen Ean made its appearance for Kerry Cassidy's Awake and Aware conference in September of 2011 in Southern California. So go and find the Awake and Aware Hoagland presentation for 2011. And this is all laid out with all the graphics, all the numbers, all the measurements, everything. But the fact is that these numbers are key to the ritual, and the President of the United States, who is currently Barack Obama, but this would have applied to anybody who was President of the United States at this time.
Right, yeah.
It, quote, just happens to be Obama, except it doesn't. Obama had to be president because of his own unique lineage and heritage, as I've laid out in these presentations. On Obama going back to his, even before his election. Do you know that I won the right to host Coast with my own guests one night, solely just me in the chair, talking to anybody I want to about anything I want to. I won this from George by predicting, based on this model, that Barack Obama, not Hillary Clinton, would become the president of the United States, the 44th president, when his poll numbers were at 20%. Science is nothing if it's not prediction. Obama is the guy. And everybody who thinks he's got a bad rep, it's a bad rep because he can't make his move as part of this bigger picture until the physics lets him make his move, because the physics is everything. It's like you can't surf, Henrik, if surf is not up. And according to our measurements, the surf is rising rapidly. The physics is changing as I'm measuring and documenting here day by day by day by day. And it's time for the good guys behind the scenes who have planned for this moment, this window, to shift the paradigm from negative to positive for thousands of years. It's time for them to make their move, and ISON appears from the numbers to be the significator of that paradigm change, and Obama is its agent. And that's why he got the Nobel Prize before he'd done anything.
So what's his move? Where is his wave? What will that entail?
I haven't a clue. I mean, I could write the script, but it would be me. It wouldn't be the big plan. I'm trying to figure it out, not imprint it.
Right, right.
All I can say is watch Obama like a hawk, pun intended, because Horus is a hawk. It's the falcon. Watch the celestial signs. Watch the numbers. Watch ISON. Is it a coincidence that we're going to come up to the next American political crisis on the exact same day? We've just been through one run-through, right, where the weird guys, the bad guys, shut down the government and almost made the United States, for the first time in history, basically become a deadbeat on its debt, which would kill civilization. It would wind up killing so many millions of people around the world through tertiary effects of the economy collapsing. I mean, the global economy, given that we are the reserve currency, would collapse if we did not fulfill our commitments and simply pay our debts. Well, we're coming up to another huge confrontation between Obama and these radical idiots that want to basically kill the United States and the world with it. And guess what that date is? February 7th, the day the Sochi Games begin. The day ISON shines brightly in the sky over the opening ceremonies with Osiris, the middle star of the belt, shining brightly at 44 presidential degrees elevation.
Let me ask you this. Do you think there's any room in all this for, like, I don't know what to call it, a metaphysical component, maybe even coincidence to a certain degree, or is it all calculations by people who seek to steer events in our world,
Henrik,
in this direction?
Henrik, that is the most exquisite question. That is a question that I have been wrestling with, and Mike and many others that I've involved in this team, from the beginning when we realized there really was a physics. Because you have to look at this as a two-tiered reality. Do you remember, of course you don't remember because you weren't alive then, but you obviously have read the work of a major psychologist called Jung?
Oh, yes.
And the concept of synchronicities?
Oh, yeah.
And he defines a synchronicity as a meaningful coincidence?
Indeed.
So if we look at the physics as the physics of the universe, and that everything is in vibration, the ether, which is the torsion field, is vibrating, and that it's the relationship of these various celestial objects to each other that changes the vibrations, which ultimately, as I again can document with the measurements of the Accutron, are changing the readings of the physics itself. So there's a cross-correlation between the changing vibrations in this unseen medium called the ether or the torsion field and physical manifest changes in instruments that I've created to measure those changes. If we can measure changes in resonance, peaks and valleys and constructive and destructive periods and when things go bonkers and when they flatline and all that. And it's in a changing, constantly dynamic, changing celestial dance. Cannot that have, and does not that not have to have, a direct one-to-one correlation with all of the lives of conscious beings on this planet? And the answer, of course, is yes. So there is a larger changing field that is modulating our events and thoughts and inclinations all the time. That's what the basis of astrology is. That's why I someday would like to write a book called Hyperdimensional Astrology, because I now have been able to get enough data to prove that certain things in canonical astrology are true, and a lot of things that astrologers believe are not. The measurements, you know, confirm some things and completely deny and falsify and negate other things. So that's on my list, my to-do list. You know, someday that book will come. The point is, yes, there is a background, constantly changing torsion field vibration of resonance and correlation, so that you could say that there are a lot of these things that are kind of built into the furniture. They're built into the fabric of reality. They're just the way the universe works, and it's what we attach to those coincidences that are really resonance points that determines how we respond and how free will takes place. By the same token, we know down through history there have been groups, we call them secret societies or mystery schools, whatever, that have understood this reality as an ancient science left over from the time when everybody knew all this stuff, and then we had whatever catastrophes happened, and it became the privy to a few priesthoods, and then everybody else becomes ignorant and dumb and stupid and don't realize this is how the universe really works. Those priesthoods continuing on these sacred secret traditions, they have been doing ritualistic sympathetic magic in an effort to harness this background resonance physics to accomplish whatever objectives and whatever ends they are trying to accomplish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt
that. It's like an invisible torsion technology.
Right.
So it's not an either-or, Henrik. It's both.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And the art form is to separate the majestic background cosmic pattern from the efforts of conscious beings to imprint on that pattern their own will to accomplish their own ends. And that's why it's taken me so long to publish any papers with all this data on the physics, even though I now have, you know, 10 years of measurements, because it's like, where do you begin? And how do you get people that haven't even a clue that this is reality? How do you get them to, you know, put their little toe in the swimming pool and get just a little tiny part of themselves wet so they begin to even consider the possibility that all this is the way reality is constructed and not according to the mainstream disinformation, which has been dedicated for decade and decade and decade to making us think none of this is real, none of this has power, so those who try to use it against us, they basically own the hall, they own the stage, because there's no counterforce in the form of a democratic opposition that's using the same tools. And that's what I think we're coming up to where the hidden, the occult, becomes visible. And what better way to make it become visible so people have to deal with it day to day than to make it visible in a celestial set of spectacular that no one can ignore or deny. And I think, given the numbers, we could be coming up, and again, this is a scenario. I'm not going to hang my hat and say this absolutely will happen. But after you get so many meaningful coincidences, and you wind up seeing things on patches at astronauts, and you see people holding press conferences with their constituency exactly when the dates and the physics are favorable, when Mercury goes posigrade, you got to say to yourself, does somebody know a bit more than I do, and do I need to catch up so I'm not left out in the cold when all the really neat stuff really becomes visible?
Well, let me ask you this here. is there a counter? I mean, the focus here on the mythology, we can certainly begin to round up on some of these notes too, if you want to, Richard. But Isis, Osiris, and Horus, you have a, you know, a certain kind of, what about an antithesis to this here? We have things like Seth, you know, or Set rather.
Oh, absolutely.
Set was
the bad guy and his cohort. Yep. Remember, they seal Osiris's fate.
Yeah.
But he beat him. He resurrected, didn't he? And the numbers attached to that are all the physics numbers. Because ultimately what this means for us is that there is no such thing as death. You know, we do go on and on and on and on and on. And this is all at some level a soap opera. And we're all supposed to be learning something by going through this soap opera. And the more that we understand how the soap opera works, the more we figure out that it is a soap opera. And isn't that kind of echoing what David Icke has been saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Except I'm saying it from the numbers, from the physics, that I'm sitting here on the computer screen as we're talking. I'm measuring the changes in physics that are going on.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to, of course, keep our eyes and ears peaked on these, on the dates, the upcoming events, and see if we get the green or the red, I guess, at the end of it.
Well, that's one thing. Remember, There's several different benchmarks here. One thing is, when it becomes really visible, will the colors be visible to people without optics, without binoculars, without telescopes, whatever? And even if they're not, if they're only visible on the images taken by amateurs, that's data. You know, it doesn't mean that it's not data. It means it just has to be presented through a certain, you know, spectral medium, certain set of instrumentation. As that great line in Forbidden Planet, you know, I forget the name of the good doctor played by Walter Pidgeon, was talking about the Krell and their lost science. This has lots of overtones of the lost science of the Krell, which gets us into a whole Hollywood discussion. How many films, how many major movies, how many TV shows are designed to educate us on this unseen reality, quietly, subliminally? So when it pops visibly, we're all kind of, oh yeah, I saw that on Star Trek, or I saw that on Star Wars, or I saw that on Fringe.
Quite a few.
So it isn't an unknown reality.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess any final ideas or thoughts then in terms of the potential cosmic fireworks, as we talked about it?
This is a model. This is a scenario. This is trying to put the dots together in a meaningful way.
Right.
We know that the ISON numbers are there. The big question now is this ritual meant only for a select few, or is it meant for everyone? If it's only meant for a select few, then nothing really spectacular is going to happen that'll shock everybody or make them all pay attention. If it's designed to be the beginning of a paradigm shift on this planet for everybody leading up to 2016, and oh, did I, by the way, tell you that our physics now says that's the real date of 2012?
Yeah, I remember that from last time. We talked about that. Yeah.
Yep, and I can prove it. And there was a new study done that actually came out and demonstrated the enormous uncertainties in the mainstream dating of the end of the 13th Baktun. And the error bars totally cover my date of 2016. So if this is preparation for the real paradigm shift coming, a la the Mayan calendar, at the end of the 13th Baktun, and why is it that suddenly Obama's putting out press releases calling everybody to have a conversation to basically talk about his next 3 years leading up to 2016, when Mercury goes posigrade and the physics will be, unlike the last several weeks, when things have been really disastrous, look at the Obamacare debacle. Does that really make sense to you?
The whole debacle, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's obvious that the websites that was designed and everything else, it's designed to fail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was designed to fail. Now, why would you design something that's the cornerstone of this president's achievements in the metonymic mainstream to fail? Because in the cosmic mythology of Egypt, Osiris has to die and Horus before they can be reborn.
The phoenix, yeah?
Yeah. And the phoenix is the symbol of the resurrection of the first time when history is put back to what happened before the catastrophe, and that ancient, ancient, high-tech, global solar system civilization, which we're seeing bits and pieces of all over the various planets we've looked at, the Moon, Mars, even at Saturn, as I said a few hours ago, is demonstrating that we are heir to something incredibly magnificent now in ruins all around us, that some group, and I think we could call them in the Egyptian tradition the Shemsu Hor, the followers of Horus, are trying to put back, to make right, so that we then recapitulate and return us to the time that came before, the first time. That is what I think is the big plan. And yes, there are bad guys trying busily, mightily, every day to undo it. And then there's another group that we don't really know. We don't even have a name for them, I don't think, that are very old and very ancient and have a very long point of view. And I think they're the ones who are architecting what is coming. And our choice will be, all of us in the middle, like the red and green light from Isan, to choose which future we want.
All right. Well, very interesting, Richard. Food for thought, no doubt. Always interesting, of course, provoking to run through the numbers with you in this way. As we begin to round things up then, Richard, for this time, any last closing words you'd like to leave us with before we give out your website and Facebook and everything else again?
No, I'm basically done. All I can say now is, you know, remember that great line from the end of that movie? Well, I forget which one it was. It was, keep watching the skies, watch the skies.
Yeah, yeah.
That is no more appropriate than it is right now. Go out before dawn and watch the skies and prepare to be amazed.
Well, I hope we will be amazed. I hope that something out of the ordinary and extraordinary will occur, actually, because I think we, on multiple levels, need that for various reasons, you know, in terms of a, something that just basically can shake the status quo a little bit, but in whatever direction that will take, of course, that will be even the more interesting to watch and observe and be vigilant about, yeah.
Henrik, after the status quo is shaken, again, it's free will. It's what will we do with our choices? That is our decision.
Indeed. We'll definitely see what happens, Richard. Well, thank you again. Give us your website for final details, and then we're going to, of course, as you've detailed many times, we're going to have a bunch of links up for people and images and stuff to look through on redicecreations.com on this program page for the program, so check out some of this stuff for yourself. But give us your details again, Richard.
Okay, enterprisemission.com and my two Facebook pages. If you're friends on Facebook, you'll be hearing from me very soon. And if you're part of the liking, you know, generation over on the other Facebook page, you'll also hear from me there. Because, yeah, we're on the eve of something extraordinary, and it's up to everybody to make of it what they will.
Excellent. Thanks, Richard. Really appreciate it.
Take care.
That's our program for today. Ladies and gentlemen, we have much more coming. Next on Red Ice Radio is Andreas Bachmeier on vaccine injuries, the only survey that's been done on the health of unvaccinated children. Very interesting. After this, we have Jesse Ventura on JFK and American politics. Also, Judy Byington, John Whitehead, and many, many more are coming on after this. Also, keep an eye on our extra section as well. We have some new inside episodes coming up, some in-depth research and analysis. And it's, of course, through your continued support that we can continue to do not only our radio program, but everything connected, news, videos, and commentaries. So a big thanks goes out to all of you members who support our work. Thank you so much. All right, have a great day or evening wherever you are, and we'll speak to you in just a few. Take it easy.